The 33 sermons on Nibbana were delivered by the Venerable Bhikkhu Katukurunde Nyanananda in Sinhala at Mitrigala Nisaranavanaya Forest Hermitage. They were translated into English by the same Venerable Monk, presently residing at Potkulkala Forest Hermitage in Kandagedra Devalagam.
Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sabba sankhara samatho, sabbupadhipatinissaggo, tannakkhayo, virago, nirodho, nibbana. This is peaceful, this is excellent, namely, the stilling of all preparations, the relinquishment of all assets, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, extinction. With the permission of the most venerable great preceptor and the assembly of the venerable meditative monks, this is the 21st sermon in the series of sermons on Nibbana. The other day we discussed, to some extent, the 10 questions known as the 10 indeterminate points, dasa avyakatavathuni, with the Buddha laid aside, refusing to give a categorical answer as yes or no. We pointed out that the reason why he refused to answer them was the fact that they were founded on some wrong beliefs, some wrong assumptions. To give categorical answers to such questions would amount to an assertion of those beliefs. So he refrained from giving clear-cut answers to any of those questions. Already from our last sermon, it should be clear to some extent how the eternalist and annihilationist beliefs peep through them. The tetralemma on the after-death state of the Tathagata, which is directly relevant to our theme, also presupposes the validity of those two extreme views. Had the Buddha given a categorical answer, he too would be committing himself to the presumptions underlying them. The middle path he promulgated to the world is one that transcended both those extremes. It is not a piecemeal compromise between them. He could have presented a halfway solution by taking up one or the other of the last two standpoints, namely, the Tathagata both exists and does not exist after death, or the Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist after death. But instead of stooping to that position, he rejected the questionnaire in toto. On the other hand, he brought in a completely new mode of analysis, illustrative of the law of dependent arising underlying the doctrine of the Four Noble Truths, in order to expose the fallacy of those questions. The other day, we happened to mention the conclusive answer given by the Buddha to the question raised by the wandering ascetic Vachagotta in the Abhivachagotta Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya concerning the after-death state of the Tathagata. But we had no time to discuss it at length, therefore let us take it up again. When the wandering ascetic Vachagotta had granted the incongruity of any statement to the effect that the extinguished fire has gone in such and such a direction, and the fact that the term Nibbana is only a reckoning or turn of speech, the Buddha follows it up with the conclusion, eva meva kho vacche yena rupena tathagatam panyapiyamano panyapiye tang rupam tathagatasya pahinam ucchinna mulam talavattukatam anubhavakatam ayatin anuppada dhamma Rupasankhara vimutto kho vacche tathagato gambhiro apameyo duparyogaho seyathapi mahasamuddho uppajyatiti na upeti na uppajyatiti na upeti uppajyati cha na cha uppajyatiti na upeti ne uppajyati na na uppajyatiti na upeti. Even so vacche, that form by which one designating the tathagata might designate him, that has been abandoned by him, cut off at the root, made like an uprooted palm tree, made non-existent and incapable of arising again. The Tathagata is free from reckoning in terms of form, vacha, he is deep, immeasurable and hard to fathom like the great ocean. To say that he is reborn falls short of a reply, To say that he is not reborn falls short of a reply. To say that he is both reborn and is not reborn falls short of a reply. To say that he is neither reborn nor is not reborn falls short of a reply. As in the case of the aggregate of form, so also with regard to the aggregates of feeling, perception, preparations and consciousness, that is to say, in regard to all the five aggregates of grasping, the Buddha made this particular declaration. From this it is clear that in this dispensation the Tathagata cannot be reckoned in terms of any one of the five aggregates. The similes reveal to us the state of the Tathagata. The simile of the uprooted tree, for instance. On seeing a palm tree uprooted but somehow left standing, one would mistake it for a growing palm tree. The worldling has a similar notion of the Tathagata. This simile of the tree reminds us of the Isidatta Theragata, which has an allusion to it. Panchakhandha parinyata tithanti chinnamulaka dukkakhyo anuppatto patto me asavakhyo. Five aggregates, now fully understood, just stand cut off at their root. Read this suffering's end, extinct for me are influxes. On reaching Arahanthood, one finds oneself in this strange situation. The occurrence of the word Sankha in this connection is particularly significant. This word came up in our discussion of the term Papancha in the context Papancha Sankha and Papancha Sanya Sankha. There we had much to say about the word. It is synonymous with Samanya, appellation, and Panyati, designation. Reckoning, appellation, and designation are synonymous to a great extent. So the concluding statement of the Buddha, already quoted, makes it clear that the Tathagata cannot be reckoned or designated in terms of form, though he has form. He cannot be reckoned by feeling, though he experiences feeling. Nor can he be reckoned by or identified with the aggregates of perceptions, preparations, or consciousness. Now, in order to make a reckoning or designation, there has to be a duality, a dichotomy. We had occasion to touch upon this normative tendency to dichotomize. By way of illustration, we may refer to the fact that even the price of an article can be reckoned so long as there is a vortex between supply and demand. There has to be some kind of vortex between two things for there to be a designation. A vortex, or vata, is an alternation between two things, a cyclic interrelation. A designation can come in only so long as there is such a cyclic process. Now the Tathagata is free from this duality. We have pointed out that the dichotomy between consciousness and name and form is the samsaric vortex. Let us refresh our memory of this vortex by alluding to a quotation from the Udana, which we brought up on an earlier occasion. Chinnam vattam navattati esevanto dukkhasya. The whirlpool cut off, whirls no more, this even this is suffering's end. This in fact is a reference to the Arhant. The vortex is between consciousness and name and form. By letting go of name and form and realizing the state of a non-manifestative consciousness, the Arhant has in this very life realized the cessation of existence, which amounts to a cessation of suffering as well. Though he continues to live on, he does not grasp any of those aggregates tenaciously. His consciousness does not get attached to name and form. That is why it is said that the vortex turns no more. To highlight this figure of the vortex, we can bring up another significant quotation from the Upadana Parivatta Sutta and the Sattatthana Sutta of the Samyutta Nikaya. Yesu vimutta te kevalino, ye kevalino, vattang tesang natthi panyapanaya. Those who are fully released are truly alone, and for them who are truly alone, there is no whirling round for purposes of designation. This statement might sound rather queer. The term kevali occurs not only in the Samyutta Nikaya, but in the Sutta Nipata as well, with reference to the Arahant. The commentary to the Sutta Nipata, Paramattha Jyotika, gives the following definition to the term when it comes up in the Kasi Bharadvaja Sutta. Sabbaguna paripunnam sabbayoga visamyuttam va. According to the commentator, This term is used for the Arhant in the sense that he is perfect in all virtues, or else that he is released from all bonds. But going by the implications of the word vata associated with it, we may say that the term has a deeper meaning. From the point of view of etymology, the word kevadi is suggestive of singularity, full integration, aloofness, and solitude. We spoke of a letting go of name and form. The non-manifestative consciousness released from name and form is indeed symbolic of the Arahant's singularity, wholeness, aloofness, and solitude. In the following verse from the Dhammapada, which we had quoted earlier too, this release from name and form is well depicted. Kodhaṁ jahe vippajahiyamānaṁ saṁyojanaṁ sabbamatikkameya taṁ nāmarūpasmiṁ asajjamānaṁ akinchanaṁ nānupatanti dukkha. Let one put wrath away and conceit abandon and get well beyond all fetters as well, that one untrammeled by name and form, with naught as his own, no pains before. We came across another significant reference to the same effect in the Magha Sutta of the Sutta Nipata. Yeve asatta vicharanti loke akinchana kevalino yatatta kalina tesu havyam paviche yo brahmano punyapekho yajetha. They who wander unattached in the world, owning not, aloof, restrained, to them in time let the Brahmin offer that oblation, if merit be his aim. This verse also makes it clear that freedom from ownings and attachment is implicit in the term kevali. It has connotations of full integration and aloofness. The term kevala, therefore, is suggestive of the state of release from that vortex. If, for instance, a vortex in the ocean comes to cease, can one ask where the vortex has gone? It will be like asking where the extinguished fire has gone. One might say that the vortex has joined the ocean, but that too would not be a proper statement to make. From the very outset, what in fact was there was the great ocean. So one cannot say that the vortex has gone somewhere, nor can one say that it is not gone. It is also incorrect to say that it has joined the ocean. A cessation of a vortex gives rise to such a problematic situation. So is this state called kevali. What in short does it amount to? The vortex has now become the great ocean itself. That is the significance of the comparison of the emancipated one to the great ocean. The commentators do not seem to have paid sufficient attention to the implications of this simile. But when one thinks of the relation between the vortex and the ocean, it is as if the Arhant has become one with the ocean, but this is only a turn of speech. In reality, the vortex is merely a certain pervert state of the ocean itself. That perversion is now no more. It has ceased. It is because of that perversion that there was a manifestation of suffering. The cessation of suffering could therefore be compared to the cessation of the vortex, leaving only the great ocean as it is. Only so long as there is a whirling vortex can we point out a here and a there. In the vast ocean, boundless as it is, where there is a vortex, or an eddy, we can point it out with the here or there. Even so, in the case of the samsaric individual, as long as the whirling round is going on in the form of the vortex, there is a possibility of designation or appellation as so and so. But once the vortex has ceased, there is actually nothing to identify with for purposes of designation. The most one can say about it is to refer to it as the place where a vortex has ceased. Such is the case with the Tathagata too. Freedom from the duality is for him released from the vortex itself. We have explained on a previous occasion how a vortex comes to be. A current of water trying to go against the mainstream, when its attempt is foiled, in clashing with the mainstream, gets thrown off and pushed back, but turns round to go whirling and whirling as a whirlpool. This is not the norm. This is something abnormal. Here is a perversion resulting from an attempt to do the impossible. This is how a thing called a vortex comes to be. The condition of the samsaric being is somewhat similar. What we are taught as the four perversions in the Dhamma describe these four pervert attitudes of a samsaric being. 1. Perceiving permanence in the impermanent. 2. Perceiving pleasure in the painful. 3. Perceiving beauty in the foul. 4. Perceiving a self in the not-self. The samsaric individual tries to forge ahead in existence, misled by these four pervert views. The result of that attempt is the vortex between consciousness and name and form, a recurrent process of whirling round and round. Because of this process of whirling round, as in a vortex, there is an unreality about this world. What for us appears as the true and real state of the world, the Buddha declares to be false and unreal. We have already quoted on an earlier occasion the verse from the Dvaitanupassana Sutta of the Suttanipata, which clearly illustrates this point. Anattaniyattamani passalokam sadevakam nimittam nam rupasmin idam satyanti manyati. Just see the world with all its gods, fancying a self where none exists, and trained in name and form it holds the conceit that this is real. What the world entrained in name and form takes to be real, it seems, is unreal, according to this verse. This idea is reinforced by the following refrain-like phrase in the Uraga Sutta of the Suttanipata. Sabbang vitathang idanti nyatva loke. Knowing that everything in this world is not such. We have referred to the special significance of the Uraga Sutta on several occasions. That discourse enjoins a giving up of everything, like the sloughing off of a worn-out skin by a serpent. Now a serpent sheds its worn-out skin by understanding that it is no longer the real skin. Similarly, one has to understand that everything in the world is not such. Tatha is such. Whatever is as it is yathabhuta. To be as it is to be such. What is not as it is ayatha or vitatha, unsuch or not such, that is to say, unreal. It seems, therefore, that the vortex whirling between consciousness and name and form in the case of samsaric beings is something not such. It is not the true state of affairs in the world. To be free from this aberration, this unreal state of duality, is to be an arahant. The three unskillful mental states of greed, hate and delusion are the outcome of this duality itself. So long as the whirling goes on, there is friction manifesting itself, sometimes as greed and sometimes as hate. Delusion impels and propels both. It is just one current of water that goes whirling round and round, bringing about friction and conflict. This interplay between consciousness and name and form is actually a pervert state, abnormal and unreal. To be a Tathagata is a return to reality and suchness from this unreal, unsuch, pervert state. We happened to mention earlier that the term Tathagata was already current among ascetics of other sects. But it is not in the same sense that the Buddha used this term. For those of other sects, the term Tathagata carried with it the prejudice of a soul or self, even if it purported to represent the ideal of emancipation. But in this dispensation, the Tathagata is defined differently. Tatha, even so, thus, is the correlative of yatha, just as, in whatever way. At whatever moment it becomes possible to say that as is the ocean, so is the vortex now, then it is the state of Tathagata. The vortex originated by deviating from the course of the mainstream of the ocean. But if an individual, literally so-called, gave up such pervert attitudes as seeing permanence in what is impermanent, if he got rid of the four perversions by the knowledge and insight into things as they are, then he comes to be known as a Tathagata. He is thus gone in the sense that as is the norm of the world, thus he is now. There is also an alternative explanation possible, etymologically. Tatata is a term for the law of dependent arising. It means thusness or suchness. This particular term, so integral to the understanding of the significance of Patisamuppada or dependent arising, is almost relegated to the limbo in our tradition. Tathagata could therefore be alternatively explained as a return to that thusness or suchness by comprehending it fully. In this sense, the derivation of the term could be explained analytically as tatha plus agata. Commentators too sometimes go for this etymology, though not exactly in this sense. According to this idea of a return to the true state of suchness, we may say that there is neither an increase nor decrease in the ocean when a vortex ceases. Why? Because what was found both inside the vortex and outside of it was simply water. So is the case with the samsaric individual. What we have to say from here onwards regarding this samsaric individual is directly relevant to meditation. As we mentioned on an earlier occasion, the four elements, earth, water, fire and air, are to be found both internally and externally. In the Mahathipadopama Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, we come across a way of reflection that leads to insight in the following instruction. Yacheva kohopana ajhattika patavidhatu, yache bahira patavidhatu, patavidhatu revesa, tang ne tang mama, ne sohamasmi, name so attati, eva me tang yathabhutam sammapanyaya dattabham. Now whatever earth element that is internal and whatever earth element that is external, both are simply earth element. That should be seen as it is with right wisdom. Thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. The implication is that this so-called individual or person is in fact a vortex, formed out of the same kind of primary elements that obtain outside of it. So then, the whole idea of an individual or a person is a mere perversion. The notion of individuality in samsaric beings is comparable to the apparent individuality of a vortex. It is only a pretense. That is why it is called asmimana, the conceit am. In truth and fact, it is only a conceit. This should be clear when one reflects on how the pure air gets caught up into this vortex as an in-breath, only to be ejected after a while as a foul outbreath. Portions of primary elements predominating in earth and water get involved with this vortex as food and drink to make a few rounds within, only to be exuded as dirty excreta and urine. This way one can understand the fact that what is actual there is only a certain delimitation or measuring as internal and external. What sustains this process of measuring or reckoning is the duality, the notion that there are two things. So then, the supreme deliverance in this dispensation is release from this duality. Release from this duality is at the same time release from greed and hate. Ignorance is a sort of going round in a winding pattern, as in the case of a coil. Each round seems so different from the previous one, a peculiar novelty arising out of the forgetting or ignoring trait characteristic of ignorance. However much one suffers in one life cycle, when one starts another life cycle with a new birth, one is in a new world, in a new form of existence. The sufferings in the previous life cycle are almost forgotten. The vast cycle of samsara, this endless faring round in time and space, is like a vortex. The vertical interplay between consciousness and name and form has the same background of ignorance. In fact, it is like the seed of the entire process. A disease is diagnosed by the characteristics of the germ. Even so, the Buddha pointed out that the basic principle underlying the samsaric vortex is traceable to the vertical interplay between consciousness and name and form going on within our minds. This germinal vortex between consciousness and name and form is an extremely subtle one that eludes the limitations of both time and space. This indeed is the timeless principle inherent in the law of paticca-samuppada or dependent arising. Therefore, the solution to the whole problem lies in the understanding of this law of dependent arising. We have mentioned on a previous occasion that the sankhata or the prepared becomes asankhata or the unprepared by the very understanding of the prepared nature of the sankhata. The reason is that the prepared appears to be so due to the lack of understanding of its composite and prepared nature. This might well appear a riddle. The faring round in samsara is the result of ignorance. That is why final deliverance is said to be brought about by wisdom in this dispensation. All in all, one extremely important fact emerges from this discussion, namely the fact that the etymology attributed to the term Tathagata by the Buddha is highly significant. It effectively explains why he refused to answer the tetralemma concerning the after-death state of the Tathagata. When a vortex has ceased, it is problematic whether it has gone somewhere or joined the great ocean. Similarly, there is a problem of identity in the case of a Tathagata even when he is living. This simile of the ocean gives us a clue to a certain much-vexed riddle-like discourse on Nibbana. Many of those scholars who put forward views on Nibbana with an eternalist bias counted the Paharada Sutta found among the eights of the Anguttara Nikaya. In fact, that discourse occurs in the Vinayacullavagga and in the Udana as well. In the Paharada Sutta, the Buddha gives a sustained simile, explaining eight marvelous qualities of this dispensation to the Asura king Paharada by comparing them to eight marvels of the great ocean. The fifth marvelous quality is stated as follows. Sayathapi Paharada yakati loke samantiyo maha samuddhan appenti yakati antalikha dhara papatanti natena maha samuddhasa unattam vapurattam vapanyayati එවමෙව කෝපහාරාද බහූචේපි භික්ඛු අනුපාදිශේසාය නිබ්බාන ධාතුයා පරිනිබ්බානಂತಿ නතේන නිබ්බාන ධාතුයා ඌනත්තං වා පුරත්තං වා පඤ්ඤායති. Just as Paharada, however many rivers of the world may flow into the great ocean, and however much torrential downpours may fall on it from the sky, no decrease or increase is apparent in the great ocean, even so Paharada. Although many monks may attain parinibbana in the nibbana element without residual clinging, thereby no decrease or increase is apparent in the nibbana element. Quite a number of scholars draw upon this passage when they put forward the view that arhats after their death find some place of refuge which never gets overcrowded. It is a ridiculous idea, utterly misconceived. It is incompatible with this dhamma, which rejects both eternalist and annihilationist views. Such ideas seem to have been put forward due to a lack of appreciation of the metaphorical significance of this particular discourse and a disregard for the implications of this comparison of the arahant to the great ocean, in point of his suchness or tattva. In the light of these facts, we have to conclude that Nibbana is actually the truth and that samsara is a mere perversion. That is why the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, from which we have quoted earlier too, is fundamentally important. It says that what the world takes as the truth, that the Aryans have seen with wisdom as untrue. Yam pare sukhato ahu, tadarya ahu dukkhato. Yam pare dukkhato ahu, tadarya sukhato vidu. What others may call bliss, that the Aryans make known as pain. What others may call pain, that the Aryans have known to be bliss. And it effectively concludes, Passa dhammam durajanam sampamulhetha aviddhasu. Behold a gnome so hard to grasp, baffled herein are ignorant ones. The truth of this profound declaration by the Buddha could be seen in these deeper dimensions of the meaning of tathata. By way of further clarification of what we have already stated about the Tathagata and the mode of answering those questions about his after-death state, we may now take up the Anuradha Sutta of the Samyutta Nikaya, which is of paramount importance in this issue. According to this discourse, when the Buddha was once dwelling in the gabled hall in Vesal, a monk named Anuradha was living in a hut in a jungle close by. One day, he was confronted with a situation which shows that even a forest-dwelling monk cannot afford to ignore questions like this. A group of wandering ascetics of other sects approached him and seated in front of him made this pronouncement as if to see his response. Yosuvahusumanradha tathagato uttamapuriso parampuriso paramapattipatto tan tathagatam imesu chatusutthanesu panyapimano panyapeti hoti tathagato parammarnativa nahoti tathagato parammarnativa hoti chanache hoti tathagato parammarnativa neva hoti nana hoti tathagato parammarnativa. Friend Anuradha, as to that Tathagata, the highest person, the supreme person, the one who has attained the supreme state, in designating him, one does so in terms of these four propositions. The Tathagata exists after death, the Tathagata does not exist after death, the Tathagata both exists and does not exist after death, the Tathagata neither exists nor does not exist after death. What those ascetics of other sects wanted to convey was that the state of the Tathagata after death could be predicated only by any one of these four propositions constituting the tetralemma. But then Venerable Anuradha made the following declaration as if to repudiate that view. Yosho avaso tathagato uttamapuriso paramipuriso parampattipatto tan tathagatan anyatrimehi chatuvishthanihi panyapyamano panyapeti. Friends, as to that tathagata, the highest person, the supreme person, the one who has attained the supreme state, in designating him, one does so apart from these four propositions. As soon as he made this statement, those ascetics of other sects made the derogatory remark, "This must be either a newcomer to the order, just gone forth, or a foolish, incompetent elder." With this insult, they got up and left, and Venerable Anuradha fell to thinking, "If those wandering ascetics of other sects should question me further, how should I answer them creditably, so as to state what has been said by the Exalted One and not to misrepresent him? How should I explain in keeping with the norm of Dhamma, so that there will be no justifiable occasion for impeachment?" With this doubt in mind, he approached the Buddha and related the whole episode. The Buddha, however, instead of giving a short answer, led Venerable Anuradha step by step to an understanding of the Dhamma, catechetically, by a wonderfully graded path. First of all, he convinced Venerable Anuradha of the three characteristics of existence. Thanking manyasi anuradha rupam nichyam va anichyam vati anichyam bhante yampana anichyam dukkham vasutam sukham va dukkham bhante yampana anichyam dukkham viparinama dhammam kallannutam samanupassitum etam mama esu hamasi esu me atta no hetam bhante. What do you think, Anuradha? Is form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this am I, this is myself. No, indeed, Venerable Sir. So also with regard to the other aggregates, the Buddha guided Venerable Anuradha to the correct standpoint of the Dhamma, in this case by three steps, and this is the first step. He put aside the problem of the Tathagata for a moment and highlighted the characteristic of not-self out of the three signata, thereby convincing Anuradha that what is impermanent suffering and subject to change is not fit to be regarded as self. Now comes the second step, which is more or less a reflection leading to insight. Tasmatiha Anuradha yankinci rupam atitanagata pachyuppannam ajjattam va bahiddhava ularikam va sukumam va heenam va panitam va yang dure santikeva sabbam rupam නේතං මම නේසෝ හමස්මි නමේසෝ වත්තාති එව මේතං යථාභූතං සම්මප්පඤ්ඤාය දත්තබ්බං ජාකාචි වේදනා අතීතානගත පච්චුප්පන්න ජාකාචි සංඥා යේකිති සංඛාරා යම්කිංචි විඥානං අතීතානගත පච්චුප්පන්න අජ්ජත්තං වා බහිද්ධාවා ඕලාරිකං වා සුඛමං වා හීනං වා පනිත්තං වා යම් දුරේ සන්ති වේවා සබ්බං විඥානං නේතං මම නේසෝ හමස්මි නමේසෝ වත්තාති එව මේතං යථාභූතං සම්මප්පඤ්ඤාය දත්තබ්බං. Evam pasam anuradha sutamari savako upasmim pini bindati vedanaya pini bindati sanyaya pini bindati sankhare supini bindati vinyanasmim pini bindati nibbindang viranjati viraga vimuchati vimuttasmim vimuttamiti jnanam hoti kina jati busitam brahmachariyam katam karaniyam naparam ittattayati pajanati. Therefore, rather, any kind of form whatsoever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all forms should be seen as it really is, with right wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Any kind of feeling whatsoever, whether past, future, or present, any kind of perception, any kind of preparations, any kind of consciousness whatsoever, either past, future or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all consciousness should be seen as it really is, with right wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Seeing thus Anuradha, the instructed noble disciple, gets disgusted of form, gets disgusted of feeling, gets disgusted of perception, gets disgusted of preparations, gets disgusted of consciousness. With disgust, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge it is liberated, and he understands. Extinct is birth, lived is the holy life, done is what is to be done, there is no more of this state of being. Here the Buddha is presenting a mode of reflection that culminates in arahanthood. If one is prepared to accept the not-self standpoint, then what one has to do is to see with right wisdom all the five aggregates as not-self in a most comprehensive manner. This is the second step. Now we have the third step. The Buddha sharply addresses a series of questions to Venerable Anuradha to judge how he would determine the relation of the Tathagata or the Emancipated One to the five aggregates. What do you think, Anuradha? Do you regard form as the Tathagata? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard feeling, perception, preparations, consciousness as the Tathagata? No, Venerable Sir. What do you think, Anuradha? Do you regard the Tathagata as in form? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as apart from form? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as in feeling? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as apart from feeling? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as in perception? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as apart from perception? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as in preparations? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as apart from preparations? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as in consciousness? No, Venerable Sir. Do you regard the Tathagata as apart from consciousness? No, Venerable Sir. What do you think, Anuradha? Do you regard the Tathagata as one who is without form, without feeling, without perception, without preparations, without consciousness? No, Venerable Sir. When Venerable Anuradha gives negative answers to all these four modes of questions, the Buddha draws the inevitable conclusion that accords with the Dhamma. Ethachate Anuradha Ditteva Dhammi Satyato Thetato Tathagate Anupalabhyamani Kallannate Thang Beya Karanam Yosu Avasu Tathagato Uttama Puriso Paramapuriso Paramapatti Patto Tang Tathagatang Anyatri Me Chatuhitani Panyapi Mano Panyapi No Hetang Bhanti. So then, Anuradha, when for you a Tathagata is not to be found in truth and fact here in this very life, is it fitting for you to declare as you did? Friend, as to the Tathagata, the highest person, the supreme person, the one who has attained the supreme state, in designating him, one does so apart from these four propositions. No Venerable Sir. This conclusion, namely, that the Tathagata is not to be found in truth and fact even in this very life, is one that drives terror into many who are steeped in the craving for existence. But this, it seems, is the upshot of the Catechism. The rebuke of the wandering ascetics is justifiable because the Tetralemma exhausts the universe of discourse and there is no way out. The Buddha's reproof of Anuradha amounts to an admission that even here and now, the Tathagata does not exist in truth and fact, not to speak of his condition hereafter. When Anuradha accepts this position, the Buddha expresses his approbation with the words, Sadhu, Sadhu, Anuradha, Pubbe chahang Anuradha etarecha, dukkhan cheva panyapemi, dukkhasaka nirodham. Good, good, Anuradha, formerly as well as now, I make known just suffering and the cessation of suffering. This declaration makes it clear that the Four Noble Truths are the teaching proper and that terms like Tathagata, Satta and Puggala are mere concepts. No doubt, this is a disconcerting revelation. So let us see whether there is any possibility of salvaging the Tathagata. Now there is the word Upalabhati occurring in this context, which is supposed to be rather ambiguous. In fact, some prefer to render it in such a way as to mean the Tathagata does exist, only that he cannot be traced. Tathagata, it seems, exists in truth and fact, though one cannot find him. This is the way they get round the difficulty. But then let us examine some of the context in which the word occurs to see whether there is a case for such an interpretation. A clear-cut instance of the usage of this expression comes in the Vajra Sutta of the Samyutta Nikaya. The Arahant Nan Vajra addresses the following challenge to Mara. Kinnu sattoti pachyesi Mara ditthi gatannuti Suddha sankhara punjoyam nanidha sattu upalabhati. What do you mean by a being, O Mara? Isn't it a bigoted view on your part? This is purely a heap of preparations, mind you. No being is to be found here at all. The context as well as the tone makes it clear that the word Upalabhati definitely means not to be found. Not that there is a being, but one cannot find it. We may take up another instance from the Purabheda Sutta of the Suttanipada, where the theme is the Arahant. Natasya putta pasavo va khettang vattum navijyati attang va pinirattang va natasming upalabhati. Not for him are sons and cattle. He has no field or site to build. In him there is not to be found anything that is grasped or given up. The words attang and nirattang are suggestive of the dichotomy from which that Arahant is free. The context unmistakably proves that the expression na upalabhati means not to be found. All this goes to show that the Buddha set aside the four questions forming the Tetralemma not because they are irrelevant from the point of view of Nibbana, despite the fact that he could have answered them. That is to say, not that he could not, but that he would not. How can one say that the question of an Arahant's after-death state is totally irrelevant? So that is not the reason. The reason is that the questions are misleading. Those who posed these questions had the presumption that the word Tathagata implied a truly existing being or person. But the Buddha pointed out that the concept of a being or person is fallacious. Though it is fallacious, for the worldling living in an illusory, unreal world, it has its place as a relative reality. Due to the very fact that it is grasped, it is binding on him. Therefore, when a worldling uses such terms as I and mine, or a being and a person, it is not a mere way of expression. It is a level of reality proper to the worldling scale of values. But for the Arahants, who have reached the state of suchness, it is a mere concept. In fact, it becomes a mere concept in the context of the simile of the vortex and the ocean. That is to say, in the case of the Arahants, there are five aggregates resemble the flotsam and jetsam on the surface waters of a vortex already ceased at its depth. On seeing the Buddha and the Arahants, one might still say, as a way of saying, here is the Buddha, here are the Arahants. For the Buddha, the concept of a being is something incompatible with his teaching from beginning to end. But for the knots, he had to use it, as is evident from many a discourse. The expression Attarya Puggala, the Eight Noble Persons, includes the Arahant as well. Similarly, in such context as the Agga Pasada Sutta, the term Satta is used indiscriminately, giving way to conventional usage. Yavata bhikkave satta, apadava, dipadava, chatupadava, bahupadava, rupinova, rupinova, sanyinova, asanyinova, nevasanyina asanyinova, tathagato tesam angamakkhayati arahan sammā sambuddho. Monks, whatever kinds of beings there be, whether footless or two-footed or four-footed or many-footed, with form or formless, percipient or non-percipient, or neither percipient nor non-percipient, among them the Tathagata, worthy and fully awakened, is called supreme. Although the term Satta occurs here, it is only by way of worldly parlance. In truth and fact, however, there is no being as such. In a previous sermon, we happened to mention a new etymology given by the Buddha to the term Loka, or world. In the same way, he advanced a new etymology for the term Satta. As mentioned in the Radha Samyutta of the Samyutta Nikaya, Venerable Radha once posed the following question to the Buddha. Satto sattoti bhante ucchati, cittavatanuko bhante sattoti ucchati. Venerable Sir, it is said a being, to what extent can one be called a being? Then the Buddha explains, Rupe, Vedanaya, Sanyaya, Sankharesu, Vinyane, Koradha, Yo Chando, Yo Rago, Ya Nandi, Ya Tanta, Tatra Satto, Tatra Visatto, Tasma Satto Timuchate. Rather, that desire, that lust, that delight, that craving in form, feeling, perception, preparation, consciousness, with which one is attached and thoroughly attached to it, therefore is one called a being. Here the Buddha is punning on the word Sat, which has two meanings, a being and the one attached. The etymology attributed to that word by the Buddha brings out in sharp relief the attachment as well, whereas in his redefinition of the term loka, he followed an etymology that stressed the disintegrating nature of the word. Satto visatto, tasma satto ti ucchati. Attached, thoroughly attached, therefore is one called a being. Having given this new definition, the Buddha follows it up with a scintillating simile. Suppose Radha, some little boys and girls are playing with sand castles. So long as their lust, desire, love, thirst, passion and craving for those things have not gone away, they remain fond of them, they play with them, treat them as their property and call them their own. But when Radha, those little boys and girls have outgrown that lust, desire, love, thirst, passion and craving for those sand castles, they scatter them with their hands and feet, demolish them, dismantle them and render them unplayable. Now comes the Buddha's admonition based on this simile. Evameva kho radha tumhe rupam vedanam sanyam sankhare vinyanam vikirata vidhamata vidhamseta vikiranikam karotha tannakhyaya patipajyata. Even so radha, you all scatter form, feeling, perception, preparations, consciousness, demolish it, dismantle it and render it unplayable, practice for the destruction of craving. And then he winds up with that highly significant conclusive remark, Tannakhyo hi Radha Nibbana, for the destruction of craving, Radha is Nibbana.
Dear listeners, it is our sincere wish to make these sermons accessible free of charge to all who like to listen to them, because the gift of the Dhamma excels all other gifts. We therefore encourage you to copy these sermons and share them with others, but kindly note that they should not be reproduced for sale. May the blessings of the Triple Gem be with you.